Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, have always been the building blocks for American education. While there are some indications that American students are faltering in the reading and writing departments, especially worrisome is the arithmetic part. Among the world's industrialized nations, we are far down the list on math proficiency and math literacy, well behind such countries as Liechtenstein and Slovakia. It's already having an impact in maintaining global competitiveness. Former Education Secretary William Bennett calls it a disaster in the making. Some U.S. companies are even giving would-be employees very basic math tests, with passage a condition of employment. Typically, the percentage you pass is very low. Here to discuss math literacy, Professor Helene Sherman, Professor of Education at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. She is the author of Teaching Learners Who Struggle with Mathematics. She is also Associate Dean for Educator Preparation in the UMSL College of Education. Robin Kinman is a fourth-grade teacher at the community school. Sarah Jamieson is the Corporate Resources Manager at LMI Aerospace in St. Charles. Her company is heavily involved in UMSL's STARS program. That's an acronym for Students and Teachers as Research Scientists. Thank you so much, all of you, for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Helene, let me begin with you. Let's just get a handle on this word proficiency. What do we really mean by math proficiency?
What we mean is that students both understand what they're doing and have the skill to do it. That is, they know what they're doing before they memorize it. Neither one, understanding or skill, is less than the other in importance. But the problem has been for years that people are able to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, but don't know why they're doing what they're doing. So they're not actually proficient.
So, but it's a term that's used at various levels, various stages for students.
Exactly.
And how is this determined internationally, where we stand?
Where we stand is determined by our scores on international tests called the TIMSS test. There are benchmarks, yes, for math proficiency at various levels. We have scored in the past few years, actually, better than we had been doing before. So our fourth graders at the proficient level have improved 12 points. Our eighth graders are about the same, but they are still considered above average in the whole benchmark system. They are not as low as we probably think they are.
Well, we'll get into the whys and
sure.
Wherefores of that in a couple of moments, but I'd like to go to each of our other guests. And Robin, I'll start with you. To determine your exposure to this proficiency deficiency, if in fact you are exposed to it as a fourth grade teacher.
As a fourth grade teacher, I noticed a big change in education. And what we're dealing with now is our education system has been set up to provide for a workforce of factory workers, where students were told what to do, what math to learn, and how to learn it. But that's not the case anymore. We are raising a generation of innovators and entrepreneurs, and we need to change our teaching practices to meet those demands.
And I assume that's something you're doing at the community school.
Absolutely. And what we need to do is implement more inquiry-based learning. So as Helene was saying, the students not only know how to do the math, they understand the math they're doing.
Just out of curiosity, do the kids in general like math?
They do. Kids in general love math. Our brains are hardwired to look for patterns and relationships, and kids love math. I think that where the education system lets them down is as they progress in math. It becomes more rote, more teacher-driven, and less about them and the math in their world.
Helene, do you agree with that we are hardwired, number one, and that kids love math? I hear an awful lot of them over the years. I've heard many of them say, I don't love it at all.
That's right. And right. And my one of the things that we talk about a great deal in our coursework is that people often say, I wasn't good at math. I'm not a math person. I don't know math. And yet they won't say, I can't read. So I'm supporting Robin in saying, yes, they are hardwired to understand and succeed. The problem is that as they move along in the system, they are often hearing these messages from everyone that they know, including perhaps at home, that they're not good at math. And so that love and that desire to learn diminishes as the years go by.
Well, let me turn now to Sarah, because I think you have a very important voice in this conversation, because you ultimately, in your industry, which is very heavily reliant, I'm sure, on math and math-related skills, see a lot of what we're going to be talking about. Your take on this whole subject of proficiency in math.
Absolutely. It is important in our workforce that we have employees that are proficient in math, especially now where we are reliant upon innovation and creativity. And in our industry especially, we are looking for professionals that have a proficiency in math or good in certain technology areas as well as engineering, because the customer specifications that we receive are very detailed and very intricate, and we need folks that can read those blueprints and read those specifications and be able to interpret them.
Are they hard to find?
It is a bit of a challenge to find qualified employees, qualified candidates. We are finding them. It just may take a little bit longer. And we may also need to add some additional training and educational opportunities for them.
Do you see the outlook? And, of course, you just represent one industry, but there's a lot of concern about global competitiveness and the fact that if this trend continues, that it will be harmful to us. William Bennett, former Secretary of Education, says it's a disaster waiting to happen unless we improve. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. Yeah. At the rate that the baby boomers may start retiring real soon, and the less our students are interested in math and science and engineering and technology, we're going to be facing a shortage of workers within our industries across the board, and that is ultimately going to impact our competitiveness globally.
Eileen, you agree with that as
I do. To some extent, I would say that it is a major problem in this country, both attitudinally and as far as people's skills go, and that we are working on that important issue with initiatives like the Common Core standards. So it is not as if people are stymied by this problem, but that we are working on it with a lot of national standards, national initiatives that each state has agreed to adopt and to initiate so that we do address this issue.
Yeah. I'd like to just hit a couple of quick facts here for the purposes of having this information as part of our discussion. Only one in four American high school seniors performs at up to proficient levels in math, one in five in science. STEM is an acronym. We'll probably be hearing that during the course of our discussion today. STEM is an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and math. American students do poorly in all of the STEM courses. The nation needs a million more college graduates proficient in STEM skills than now projected over the next decade. That doesn't paint a very, very good picture.
It's a challenge, as they say, and we have definitely some issues to deal with. I keep going back to the idea that our culture, our country, doesn't value STEM research, STEM education, as we would like our country to do. The money behind it, the initiatives that have gone on behind it have been small, scattered, but we are now stepping up to that and working with these standards, these Common Core standards, to deal with exactly what you're talking about.
Robin, can you identify what the Common Core standards are?
Yes, I can. The standards in mathematics, like algebra, number and operation, geometry, communication, representation. So these are all the standards of mathematics that teachers are expected to cover throughout the course of a year. And the Common Core is very explicit about what is expected at each grade level and giving examples of that. But what is difficult in the culture is changing the teachers. Teachers teach the way they were taught is the way that we behave. And any human behavior is hard to change. So teachers that aren't used to and never experienced this kind of deep learning and deep content and knowledge have difficulty redesigning their classrooms to meet these standards.
What have we been doing wrong? What needs specifically to be redesigned?
I think the Common Core has helped us define the curriculum. What do we need to focus on? I think the classroom instruction needs to change so that students are working together and asking questions, and that teachers are asking questions, not giving answers, so that we're fostering creativity and communication in our kids.
Aline, your take on that? What do we have to do to change?
Right. What we need to do is to help youngsters at a very early age develop numeracy and the idea of mathematics. That has been known that it is that people learn what they understand. But again, the years of learning mathematics as a skill, thinking that it is an inherited skill, you can sing and dance and do math, has stopped people from thinking that they were even supposed to understand math. So now what we're doing is developing the numeracy, the concepts, the fluency early in the years so that people have a feel for mathematics. They know that 1/4 is less than 1/2, but 4 is bigger than 2. Those kinds of ideas have to be developed early with a lot of experiences. New math, the kind of math, I say new math, and then people say, oh, no, that was didn't work necessarily. But that was the same kind of initiative. When Sputnik went up, we had the same concerns that we weren't doing well enough and tried to use more math content early. And that's what the Common Core does, along with developing a number sense with students so they early on understand what they're doing.
Sarah, do you think there's a math aptitude? Do you think that some kids have it and other kids don't? We talked about hardwiring a moment ago, but I'm wondering about that still.
I believe all students have it. I believe they start in the education system and they learn quickly, they pick up things quickly, but somewhere along the line they lose their confidence. And at that point, then they're not progressing as they probably should in math and science. But I believe every child has the aptitude.
I have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back and continue this conversation. We'll also bring in another voice, Victoria Sheriff, a senior at O'Fallon Township High in Illinois, will join us. We'll find out about her math aptitude. I suspect it's pretty good. One of the reasons she's here. But we'll go to her in just a moment. With me in studio is Professor Helene Sherman of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Robert Kinman is a fourth grade teacher at the community school. And Sarah Jamison is the corporate resources manager at LMI Aerospace in St. Charles. Back to continue this conversation in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Our conversation today is focusing on math literacy or lack thereof in our country today. We have a pretty poor record internationally with regard to proficiency in math skills. My guests in studio here are Sarah Jamison, Corporate Resources Manager at LMI Aerospace in St. Charles. Robin Kinman is a fourth grade teacher at the community school. And Professor Helene Sherman is a professor of education at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We're bringing into the conversation now Victoria Sheriff. She's a senior at O'Fallon Township, Illinois High School. She is CEO of the school's robotic team, which won the first robotics competition at the St. Louis Regional recently. FIRST, by the way, is an acronym for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. Her team will compete in the World Tournament being held here later this month. Victoria, thanks so much for being with us, and congratulations.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, what kind of a math student are you?
Well, last year I took the highest level of math my school offers, and so I'm currently taking classes at my local community college for Calculus 2.
Oh, boy. Well, congratulations for you on that as well. What do you think about what we've been talking about here, about the lack of overall proficiency in math skills in this country today? And do you see it amongst your peers?
I completely agree with everything that's been said so far, and I do see it like within my peers. A lot of kids just don't care for math or sciences, and, you know, I think that it is a problem and that there should be more focus on the STEM fields.
Why do you think they don't care for it? We've been hearing here that we're all hardwired for it.
I think a lot of kids, like I've heard earlier, some of them get discouraged along the way, just going throughout the ranks of high school. It gets tough, and a lot of kids, I guess, just don't like it and don't want to put forth the effort to strive for the next level.
Well, that's something that that never has been a problem for you. Have other kids, as you were progressing through your earlier years in school, kind of held your skill at math against you in any way?
Not really. I've always liked math. I've always liked sciences. And I've kind of just kept working towards it and trying to help other people out also with math.
I ask that because to some people there is a certain stigma associated with it. Do the folks here at the table agree with that?
Yes.
Any ideas as to why that is?
I don't really know. I know, like, with math and science fields, we kind of seem, people who are focused on those fields kind of seem a little, like, more socially awkward, and they think, math and science are so nerdy and everything. So there might be that kind of negative stigmatism towards it. But, I mean, I honestly don't feel that way about these subjects.
Well, let's find out how you're applying that in your wonderful, I guess it's a hobby. Would we call it a sport, the robotics field that you're in?
Some people do call it a sport.
How important is math for that, for you and for the rest of the team?
Oh, it's really important. We have really great mentors, and pretty much we learn a lot of things, but we do all the work ourselves. We make the robot, we make the coding, do all the electrical work. That's all us. And so learning all those kind of things in school, it really does help.
Could you compete personally as successfully as you have if you didn't have the kind of math skills and, I'll dare I say, aptitude as well?
I think we go through like a training process with each new member, so everyone does need those skills, but they're readily available, and you know we're always willing to help each other out and make sure that everyone's up to par.
What ideas would you have if you could pull the switch for teaching math? Would you make some changes?
I think I've been very, very lucky with the teachers I've had at my school. They've done a great job of making sure that I personally understand the topic, and they've made it really enjoyable for me, and I know a lot of my friends feel the same way. But I know my case is it's very different from a lot of people who feel like their teachers aren't really helping them that much.
You know, we have some Facebook comments that came just prior to our going on the air. I'll ask you to respond to what I'm going to read, and then to the others here at the table to do the same. Becky has written us saying, "Oh boy, where do we start? My professional opinion, stop the cycle of hatred of math, i.e., quote, I'm not good at it because my mom, dad, right. teacher isn't good at it. Don't let kids get dependent on the calculator. Let them discover the beauty and pattern of numbers. Make students show their work. Help students see math in the real world. I learned fraction operations by cooking with my mom, and before that, if I wanted to cover my art table with contact paper, I had to measure to find out the area." But what do you think of those ideas?
I think those are great ideas, and I think that would actually help a lot with kids understanding like science and technology. And I think that's what our first robotics team has helped a lot of kids go further into those fields, just because we've been able to apply everything we learn in real life.
How about, Robin, I'll give that same notion to you. What do you think about those ideas?
I think Becky is right on, and that's what I'm saying, that I think all of our children are ready and willing and wanting to learn math and be part of it. They play with blocks. They build patterns early in their childhood, and somehow our culture sucks that out of them. They have been taught that math is something that's rote, that you have to memorize. When I went to school, we learned to divide fractions by saying, it's not ours to question why, just invert and multiply. And we had to learn these formulas. They didn't make sense. Even our counting system doesn't make sense. What does 11, 12, and 13 mean? 110 and 11 are place. From the very beginning, children are asked to memorize and not make connections. So what we need to stop now is put math in a positive light and help these kids make connections and play with these Legos and build these robots and succeed.
Sarah, your thoughts with regard to some of these ideas?
I think it's very important to make math and science relevant to students. In everyday life, we see science and math everywhere. I was reading an article on the St. Louis Public Radio website last night about baseball.
Atta girl.
And how you can relate math to baseball is in, you know, the speed of the pitch and the type of pitch, a curveball, a knuckleball, or, mm-hmm. you know, the weight of the bat. And you get kids interested in things that they enjoy, things that they like to do, and relate it back to science and math. I think that's how you encourage them and how they build confidence, and then they're willing to learn and they're open to it.
Right. And yeah. Helene.
Oh, absolutely. Everything that's been said is so true. I read an article also about a school in Tennessee that holds math night at a grocery store. And so youngsters find out how to price items and how much to weigh them and how it is all organized mathematically and even how to solve problems as they walk around the grocery store. So those are exactly the kinds of experiences we have to have early on.
This is very important. I'm glad you brought that up because it's very important to note that being proficient in math is not only something you need to join the aerospace industry and Sarah over here. It's something you need to navigate life, how to balance
every minute of the day.
Yeah.
I will just tell you that the other day, three times during the day, I heard different people say to me, I'm not a math person. And all of them were using were in professions, there were jobs that required mathematics, even at the grocery store, but they don't see it that way. Even a politician told youngsters that he didn't do any mathematics, he just used a calculator. So it's pervasive, this attitude that we have to work on.
Robin, what about using a calculator? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Calculators are a good idea and a bad idea. It depends on how you're using them. So I'll answer that as a politician. Students need to understand the operations and what they're doing, but calculators are very helpful for checking one's work or doing a complicated math problem where the arithmetic is not the key to the problem, but the steps are the key to the problem.
And Sarah, I'm sure you want people to know who join your company how to use a calculator because it certainly is important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's important to learn how to use it, but not to be dependent on it.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Any thoughts on that?
No,
Hilly?
Absolutely right. Calculators are not the work of the devil, and they are not the substitute for understanding what you're doing. Many people don't even know if their answers are correct because they don't mentally understand our process if they don't know what they're doing.
Victoria, do you have any thoughts on that? Do you use a calculator?
I completely agree with everything. Calculators, I'm not a big fan of because I like to do everything by hand just so I know I understand everything. But, I mean, they are a really nice tool to double-check my work and to make the process a lot quicker if I have to do a lot of work.
You know, the British apparently also have a problem similar to ours. And I saw an article getting ready for this program talking about some of the things we're talking about here. It says, encourage children to play math puzzles and games at home. Anything with a dice will help them enjoy.
That's exactly right.
Robin, you were getting into that a little while ago. Never tell children they are wrong when they are working on math problems. There's always some logic to what they are doing.
Yes.
I thought that was a very interesting one. Your take on that, Robin?
Well, it's definitely we need to take the stance of the person who's asking the questions, not making the judgment. Tell me about your thinking. Why do you think that? And figure out where they're coming from because, like your quote says, there's a lot of logic that children are using every day. And there are hundreds of trade games out there that would reinforce math concepts if parents would pick them up. The game that we played when we were young, Battleship, works with coordinate grids, and Blockus with spatial relations, and Quirkle with patterns and what makes a set. There's Farkle and Uno and all those counting games. They're all available for kids and parents to play with.
Victoria, how about games for you? As growing up and achieving the proficiency that you have, was that something that you did?
Almost definitely. I loved all those kinds of games, and I also did a lot of extra math work. I know there are a lot of extra math tutoring opportunities out there, and so I did a lot of that when I was younger, and it helped me get ahead of everything.
All right. Well, I think we're going to let you go, Victoria Sheriff. I assume you're missing some school time, which maybe or maybe not you enjoy doing. But we appreciate your spending some time with us. And again, congratulations for the success of your robotics team. We wish you well in the competition that's coming up.
Thank you so much.
That is Victoria Sheriff calling us from O'Fallon Township High School over on the Metro East Side. I want to turn back to you, Sarah. The STARS program is something that I've had some familiarity with over the recent years. It's a great program, getting kids involved in the kinds of things that we're talking about here, science and technology. One of the things that I have noticed in the various events that I've attended is the the preponderance of Asian kids that are excelling in these areas. Do you have a theory as to why that is happening?
I'm not sure I have a theory on that other than what I find is that with students, when they start to lose confidence in math, if it's reinforced at home to learn and and to achieve in that area, I believe students will press a little bit harder. When my daughter was younger and she was starting out in elementary school, someone who is a proponent of education, higher education, I pressed my daughter to be interested in math and science, and she has excelled in those areas. So I think the reinforcement that comes from parents and from teachers is very important for kids to remain interested, and I think that might be the difference.
I see everybody here nodding.
Yes, it's a growth mindset. And the idea that one is either a math person or not a math person by the time they're 4 or 5 is just a myth. So it's a matter of effort, as in most everything in our life. When we put the effort toward it, we're going to succeed. Not everybody is going to be the top achiever, but certainly far more than we are now.
And Robin?
Absolutely. The parent support couldn't be more valuable. And with the messages that you send your children about your own math experiences, if you are feeling insecure, you need to mask that from your kids.
That's right.
And support them and talk and figure out ways to incorporate math and pull it out in your everyday life.
Let's go to the phones. We have a number of people who want to get into this conversation. The number is 382-8255. For those of you who are thinking about calling, please do so at that number. Let's start with Corinne calling from St. Louis. Corinne, thank you for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to comment. I'm a student in the education department at Washington University. And in our teacher prep program for the elementary school teachers, we do have 2 math courses we take. We take 1 in methods and 1 in content. And what I'm finding in my peers is that even as undergraduate and graduate students at Washington University, the class that delves into number theory, number systems, a deeper understanding of numbers, there's huge resentment for having to take that course. People strongly dislike that course. And the comment that people keep making is, I want to teach 6th grade. When am I ever going to need to know different bases or these higher level math skills for 6th grade? And I think it's a really sad sign of how people conceptualize math as the teacher only needing to know what they're going to teach instead of this broader understanding of how do numbers work, what's beyond the formula.
Corinne, thank you so much for the call. Helene, I'll throw that one your
right,
way.
Right, it's not an unusual, unusual thought. It is sad to hear that because, in fact, 6th graders can ask 8th grade questions, and the curriculum that is now being taught through Common Core and other standards goes far beyond what someone learned when they were 12. So the idea that you only learn what's in your grade is just not a realistic goal at all.
Robin, this whole notion of teaching the test that is a part of what we're doing these days, is this a good thing, do you think? Is this going to encourage young people to really take to some of these issues?
I think it's important that students understand the objectives. What objective am I trying to teach you today? I think that's important. But teach to the test is not something that's going to serve them well in life. So I think children need to be aware, this is what we're learning, this is why we're learning it, and be very transparent about that. But as a teacher, if I only knew the 4th grade curriculum, to get back to the caller's question, I not only need to be able to answer the questions that are going to project the student forward, but I also need to know the foundation and what has happened before so I can build on that. So it's not just, oh, I just need to know 6th grade. I need to know the whole gamut. I need to know where the children are coming from and where I want them to go.
I just want to add one quick thing. The range in most classrooms is 4 years, 2 years behind, 2 years ahead. So
absolutely
what Robin said is true. Yes.
Any thoughts from you, Sarah, on that?
I would think that learning beyond the grade level that you're teaching would expand understanding. And so that, in other words, it's going to help the student as well to increase their understanding. So.
Yeah, I would think that the people would come to work for a company like yours, too, would probably be people who would fall into that category. Of expanding that range.
Exactly. Yeah. We want to expand the range.
Let's go back to the phones. Anne is joining us from Kirkwood. Anne, welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. This is such a topic that reaches to my heart.
Good.
For all these years that I've been a teacher. When I was a teacher in the classroom for 12 years, I wanted to teach my students how to think about math. We got really good at thinking about math. We still scored just the same on our tests. They did not have the proficiency in the skill base. as I left the classroom to homeschool my own kids and open an after-school learning program in Kirkwood, I found that that's really what they needed. When I could give them the skill base, and then they could take that back to class with the wonderful experiential learning they were doing in their classrooms of linking various concepts in math based in one simple problem, they flourished. And they were feeling like they were failures before they got that skill base. So I'm seeing we keep coming around to the same issues and the same answers from when I first started teaching all those years ago. Still the same thing. Parents are key. Being able to work hard and have the kids expect that I'm going to struggle with this and I can succeed if I keep, if I keep trying. And then to have that skill base behind them so that they have that to fall back on as they're moving forward into the new concept areas.
Thank you so much for the call. Helene, a comment?
I agree. I think that before we have not emphasized the comprehension as much as we have the skills, so I would say back to a balanced approach. But of course, students need skills and need a structure that is going to support the understanding. It's a yin-yang kind of thing, and it is an important, have always been both in there to make successful students.
I have an email here from Tom who writes, please be a little skeptical about the claim that all workers need advanced math proficiency. How many workers do you know who need math beyond adding, subtracting, division, multiplying? Educators say all Americans need advanced math since that is where their job security comes from. What do you think, Sarah? You agree with that?
I'm not sure I agree with that because what we are finding in our industry, I can go back to the aerospace industry, the parts that we are producing in our own organization are more complex. They require more thought, more critical thinking. So I don't necessarily agree that we just need basic math.
It really
understanding.
It really depends on the kind of career path that a person wants to take. I mean, some are going to require more than others.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. But we're talking about life skills, too.
Exactly.
Yes, it's not simply a matter of career choice. It's a matter of knowing how much you owe on your credit card and understanding that.
But Robin Tom is probably saying, do I really need to know algebra to make my way through life if I'm not going to be involved in
something? And I'm going to argue with Tom and say yes. Because algebra is going to teach him thinking skills and communication skills and proof skills. And, yes, I don't use algebra very often in my daily life, but that going through that process, math is a playground where we can learn these skills that will help us in everything we do. Not everyone is going to be a math science major.
I have to take another break now. You just heard from Robin Kinman, fourth grade teacher at the community school. Also with me in studio is Sarah Jamerson, who is with the LMI Aerospace firm in St. Charles. And also in studio, Professor Helene Sherman, professor of education at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Back to take more of your calls, emails, tweets, whatever, in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation on math literacy. We have a number of calls. I want to get to them and will in just a second, but we have another question here from Facebook from Kevin, who says, what about stop grading? Stop grading math. I'm not sure how to explain my thoughts, but all I know is right now I'm in a math-heavy course that I enjoy learning, but when I'm forced to do homework, I get frustrated. But it's the grading part that interests me, Robin. What do you think?
That is a hot topic because I sympathize with that because I feel, too, that students need to do the math for math's sake and learn for learning's sake. But as an educator, also, we need to be able to give students feedback and let them know in some objective way how they're progressing, because you can't get to the end of your math course and suddenly find out that you failed it. So there needs to be benchmarks and check marks, and the school systems are all wrestling with, do we give ABCs? Do we give developing, progressing, mastering? What kind of benchmarks are we giving our children? And certainly I wouldn't advocate for being grade focused, but you do need to have some kind of evaluation to know how you're doing.
I mean, I'll bet you agree with
that. I do agree. It's an educational system, and we need some sort of formal approval as students move through, of course.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We'll bring in Shubeshna, who is calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Hi. I teach economics at Washington University, and I came to this country from India about 27 years ago. I have been in teaching, but not school teaching. and college teaching. One of the things that I saw almost as soon as I came was that kids here had trouble with math, and I did not understand that, why that was the case, until my children went to school. And one of the things, I mean, it's a complex problem, and I, of course, don't have the answers to anything, but one thing I did notice that could be changed easily is that kids are not given the tools early on, and they are asked difficult questions. And so the only way for them to answer those difficult questions is to memorize. So they learn to memorize math at a very early age, and that's a habit that is very hard to kick.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the call. Who would like to respond to that?
A lot depends on the school system that students are in, the consistency of the program, whether or not that is an advanced program, a not advanced program, a private school, a public school, because not all schools do start so early with the skills. So it could have been that particular experience that her children had.
I feel like, though, in the past, a lot of our curriculum in the United States for teaching math, a third of the year is review. Another third of the year is something new. And then I just lost my thought. But that the kids are spending so much time reviewing. And, oh, I know the other third is introduction to a new concept that is not expected to master. So only about a third of their school year are they learning information that is expected to master. So now with the Common Core and looking at mastery-based curriculum, looking at Singapore math and other models, I think we're going to move forward because we're going to have high expectations of mastery.
What is Singapore math?
Singapore math, again, from the TIMSS report that you quoted earlier, Herlene, mm-hmm. It's the country of Singapore has scored notoriously high from coming from a very low spot. And so many countries are looking at the way that they are teaching mathematics and trying to use some of their strategies of going from a real concrete to a pictorial to an abstract model of teaching mathematics. But then also we can't look too closely at Singapore because they have a different culture than we have in the United States. So we can't just carbon copy their program and expect it to work with our kids. But it is a place that we're all looking in math.
Any other thoughts from the table? Should I go back to the
one more question, issue about the international test, and that's exactly right. Robin is correct that various countries that score higher than we do are not organized in the same particular way, nor do they have the same educational system. We are much more public institutions. We have many more students who do have needs in schools that may not be met in other countries, so we always have to take those tests with a grain of salt.
Sarah, how much of an international flavor is there at your company?
We have a small portion of our population that would be international. As we are growing more and more, we will also be faced with some additional challenges that come with cultural differences, and we'll have to be able to meet those challenges.
Let's go back to the phones, and I think Robert will be our next caller. Robert, go ahead, please.
I have a comment. I read a book, it's by Glenn Duman. It's titled How to Multiply Your Baby's Intelligence. And in this book, he obviously his opinion, he says that every child has the ability to be a genius in any and all areas of life. He said the human brain is growing at an incredible rate of speed from the time of birth to the age of six. And that if you put effort into teaching your child during these formative years when they're pretty much at home with you, they call this permanent brain power capacity increases in these particular areas. And I started doing that with my children. My oldest boy, I started teaching him, you know, when he was 2 months old. At age five, he was reading at about a junior high level. He's 6 years old now. Within the last year, I've been teaching him this type of math. I came across titled finger math, where you can add and subtract, multiply and divide on your fingers. According to the author, he could do it faster than someone could do it on a calculator. But my little boy is six. He's very proficient at adding and subtracting. I haven't got into harder types of math with him yet. But nevertheless, that was my comment. I just wanted to see what they thought about teaching your child, you know, the earlier the better. But it seems that it has helped a lot, at least for my two children. And that's all I have.
Thank you so much for the call, and congratulations on how well the youngsters are doing. Robin?
And absolutely, congratulations, and you're a role model for us all because we should be starting very young and not just with number and counting and rote, But asking our children which is heavier, which has more volume, asking questions when you're setting the dinner table. How many pieces of silverware do we need if everyone gets a spoon? Or tomorrow night we're going to need forks, knives, and spoons. How much silverware are we going to need? Dividing up the dinner tab. You take your kids out for dinner and ask them, how much was it per person tonight? Why was it more expensive this week than last week? Asking those questions. Go to your school librarian. They will give you bedtime stories. Some are deliberately written for math concepts, and some just have math concepts embedded that can really help your children with vocabulary and make it fun and interesting.
This is really taking us back to the parents again, which is obviously important, as we've discussed.
Right. And a lot of funds are being put toward early childhood education now, especially with mathematics. And all of the research that I have in front of me says that students will gain 20 to 40% more than they would have if not having this sort of preparation when they're early. And that lasts until way until the upper grades. So right on. That's wonderful work with children.
Okay. You're nodding. Sarah, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I just, you know, want to ditto what's being said. Starting early on is very important, and exposing kids and making it a part of just everyday life makes it so much easier.
Well, we have an email here from Sherry, which I think will garner some response from our panelists here. She writes, she completely disagrees with the premise of today's program. And that's okay, Sherry. We still love you. She says, I'm a graduate of UMSL's teachers program. This inquiry-based teaching does not work for math. Math needs rote work, redundancy. Then explaining the operations behind it later is all right. I see students every day who are paralyzed by simple math problems, and it's because they've not done enough of them. Constructivist teaching works for other subjects. It teaches students to ask questions. It doesn't work for math. Our country's decision to get off this particular high horse is of paramount need, and moving to Common Core standards is a boondoggle. Helene.
Well, then, it's hard to know where to begin. I would say that one individual experience does not generalize to everyone's experience. I'm sorry that the writer is upset with how it is that education is organized now, but our experiences across the board, if you read the literature, if you talk to teachers in the area, people in business, you'll find that they really do want the students to understand what they're doing. But again, it's a balance. If teachers are only playing games, that's not going to work. If they only memorize, it's not going to work.
I think that if you want to achieve, well, change is hard. And we're talking about a systemic change in our education system so that our citizens will be creative problem solvers. So I think that many people would agree with this, that math should be taught by memorization, and that's the right way to go because that's the way that worked for me. But that's not the way that's going to work for our next generation and our future generations. We need thinkers and questioners and problem solvers.
Absolutely. The critical thinking skills are critical, and no pun intended, but they are. And to have folks that are thinkers, problem solvers that can – you know, look at a problem, pick it apart, understand it, and then be able to apply some creativity, some innovative way of solving the problem to make a difference. That's what we need.
And the mental exercising, the working that muscle up here in the math realm will help in those in that kind of judgment
yes.
making.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's go back to the phones and bring in Harriet calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Harriet.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of comments. First, Professor Sherman's ideas about attitudes toward math being different are right on. And some of the others that are saying the teachers feel they don't need higher math skills because they're going to teach first grade. It's very interesting that we never hear a teacher say, well, I don't need to learn writing skills and I don't need to enjoy great literature because I'm only going to teach first grade. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you,
Harriet.
Thank you.
Go,
Harriet. We agree.
Let's get some more calls in as time allows here. Dan, calling from St. Louis, you're next. Go ahead.
Yes. I have a theory about why kids lose interest. I mean, I haven't had a math course in a long time, but what I recall is that real-world applications, you know, like essentially word problems, stop at a very early age. You know, I think one of the examples they gave was calculating the area of a table, for example. And what I was wondering is why, or when kids actually get, like, say, into algebra, why are kids not given some kind of practical practical word problem that would help them apply the things that they learn in algebra, like order of operations.
Okay. Well, if you look at new materials that have come out in the last 5 to 10 years in alliance with the standards and with the academic standards, say, from the National Council of Teacher of Math, they do. I have to encourage you to look at some of the later materials. Those books all have practical experiences for algebra. There are algebra tiles where you can actually show what X squared looks like. Who knew it looked like anything? But there but there is a way that you can concretely understand those experiences. So they're there.
Back to another caller here, and we'll bring in Mark, calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to listen to all of your program, but early on, one of your guests there said that it is difficult at times to get teachers to change the methods that they use to teach because they teach the way they've been trained. And as a college professor, I taught mathematics at more than one university for a long time. It seems to me that the problems in K through 12 really start in what I call the 18th grade. And by that, what I mean is that a lot of universities are producing PhDs, because they get government funding to do so, in mathematics, that don't really know math themselves as well as they should, especially for a PhD, even for a master's degree. They end up teaching at, say, some regional college. They teach math. They are aware that they don't know it nearly as well as they should, so they're not very demanding with their students. And we end up with high school math teachers who really aren't adequately trained in the ideas of mathematics. So when you're not trained well, it's certainly frightening to try to be challenging with your students.
And you definitely lean back on what you experienced as a child and your own upbringing in the classroom. As a new teacher, your experiences are your school experiences. So even if you're taught in progressive ways, it's hard to implement that. And if your principal isn't supporting that as well, and continuing education for teachers is abysmal. It's something all professionals need to get retrained year after year after year, to kind of break this cycle of and bring in quality, up-to-date teaching methods.
What about, as time starts to get away, what about older teachers and retraining older teachers? Because the new generation is different.
It is. And what Robin said is exactly right. Professional development is the key there, but there also has to be an administrative leadership style in the school that encourages people to think that they do need retraining. Often people have been teaching the same way and they felt they were successful, or they're not encouraged to change because there's not enough, frankly, salary change to begin to spend hours on learning new ideas. So when the whole school is in favor of these models, these ways of teaching in response to what's going on, it works.
Yeah. We only have a little more than a minute left. I'd like to put a cap on this, and I'll start with you, Sarah. What advice do you have, and relatively quickly, if you don't mind, for young people entering the workforce in terms of their approach to all of this?
I would just say that they should be open to new opportunities and to learning different things, even if they feel like they're not good at science or math or technology or engineering, that they be willing and open to considering it and being willing to be exposed to it and try it before they say, I don't like it or I can't do it.
Helene, how about you? A bottom line to this?
The bottom line is that students have to understand what they're doing, and that starts early. It starts early in the home. It starts early in schools. Hands-on, real-world experiences make mathematics real, and it is not an inherited skill from your mother.
And Robin, final word?
Create a community of learners who really celebrate and enjoy math. Celebrate Pi Day. Go on math field trips and just bring it alive and highlight that it's – It's not. It's maybe geeky, but it's really awesome. It's great.
And Pi Day is P-I Day, as opposed
That's
to P-I-E.
Right.
Yeah.
March 14th.
Okay. That's right.
We can celebrate both, though, if we like.
Absolutely, and we do at community school.
I want to thank you all so much. That's Robert Kidman. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Sarah Jameson, thank you. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
And Helene Sherman, thank you for
thank
being
you.
With us today. Most interesting
Enjoyed
program.
It.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the new Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, Pope Francis I. He's a Jesuit and first non-European Pope of the modern era. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.